Atlanta Life Radio Station, WALR, bringing you the best in talk radio.
Hello and how are you? We are back for another week of the show. I'm Mark in California. Beth is in Texas. Our producer, Mel D, is in Georgia. So we've got the whole country. We're kind of geographically spread out. I kind of like that. Beth, how are you? How's your week going? Everything going okay?
Everything's going great. It's getting hot here in Texas. Hot, hot, hot.
Already?
Yeah,
I guess May. I guess that's... Back in my Texas days, you get the hot, rainy weather, and you just kind of deal with it. So, take an umbrella if you go out and it's raining. But if it's hot, you can use it too to block the sun. So
I know that's great advice. Protect your skin.
You know we should do a whole episode on skin protection. That would be good.
We're going to cover a lot of ground today.
We're going to talk about addiction, overcoming addiction, mental health. It's May, so it's still Women's Health Month. So we started this theme last week. How was your Mother's Day? Was Mother's Day good? I'm gonna tell a quick story in a second, but your Mother's Day was good. You made the phone call and sent the gift, and you did all that, right?
I did. It was much appreciated. Yes. So weekend is over, and back on to Women's Health Month.
That's right. Speaking of that, so for my Mother's Day, my mom lives close to me. It's probably about 10 minutes away. We did a dinner for her, and it was my brother's birthday as well. So it's a cluster. There's a couple things. So we kill two birds with one stone thing. And, you know, you forget, you know, this was a last minute thing because it's hard to go buy somebody flowers in the morning when you're going to see them at night, because now do I have to come back and then put them in water? And so anyway, for a guy, it's a whole big deal. Anyway, I didn't realize. So if you go into a grocery store on Mother's Day and you don't go in the morning, you're basically picking at the bones. It's like the store and the flowers and the cards have been complete. It looks like it's been looted. And so here I am. There's like four cards to choose from. And I'm one of these guys that loves a funny card. There's no funny cards. It's all those like thick cards that are like, you know, sappy. They're
$8.99.
Oh, they're $8.99. And the beginning of the card says, you know, thank you for giving birth to me. And then the flower section, the roses are all, you know, it's a mix and match, and it's just this hodgepodge of different kinds of flowers. Anyway, long story short, picked up some flowers, got her some mismatched roses and a really uncomfortable card, and that was Mother's Day. So on the subject. And she was happy because, you know, I wrote something nice on the card that it was from me and from Murray and me, and we were good. But, geez, I just need to be a better planner with that. So that's kind of
Yes, you do. Oh, my gosh. That's
on the subject of mental health, I think at least for her, she was happy, and she was in a good state of mind just for getting that kind of gift and that kind of thought. So flowers and cards, day of Mother's Day. Not necessarily the best idea if you're going to go anytime past noon. So that's my rant on that, and I hope it was a decent rant.
That was a funny rant. That was funny. You made me laugh. Hilarious.
Okay. Women's health, mental health, addiction. These are pretty deep topics that we're gonna get into today. You wanted to talk, Beth, a little bit here in the intro about mental health and, you know, maybe mental health checkups and things like that. What's kind of on your mind on that subject before we get into our interview?
You know, I think mental health can be viewed as such a taboo subject. I mean, when we come down with a cold, most of us don't hesitate to pop a pill or take some NyQuil or visit the doctor. But if you can't seem to shake, you know, worries or that nagging sense of hopelessness, you know, you just plug along like nothing's wrong. And I personally think that we are in dire state of mental health downfall in the United States. And I was reading somewhere like over 25% of people suffer from some sort of mental disorder. And when I say mental disorder, I'm not talking about schizophrenia or, I mean, those could be obviously, but we're talking about depression or anxiety. But yet half of those people, less than half of them receive treatment. And I do think that it's so important to think about your mental health because there's a strong connection between the mind and the body. If you're in physical pain, you know, your work and your family life may be affected, mm-hmm. and you may not be able to do the activities you enjoy. But when you think about your mental health, think about how that stress, that anxiety, that depression can really lead to other, you know, bad things in your life. And there is a strong connection between mental health and better physical health. I mean, you're going to live a longer, happier life and, I don't know. I just think that this is a really important thing to prioritize. And I think people think, hey, I'm strong. I'm strong-willed. Then I don't have to worry about my mental health. And that is not it at all. Everybody needs, you know, someone to talk to at some point in their life. Everybody struggles on some level. And, you know, kind of piggybacking on the addiction, people that are mentally healthy, they are less likely to engage in risky behaviors, and we all know risky behaviors can result in addiction. So I just think it's just kind of a myriad of things to talk about and the importance of every single one of those. So, yes, mental health is so important. And I know we'll probably tackle other shows even deeper than this, but, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, and you know, you've counseled a whole lot more people than I have, but I kind of find that even if I'm just talking to someone casually with a cup of coffee and they're talking about something along the lines of weight loss or something that they want to better themselves with physically. One of the first, you know, couple questions I might ask is I'm trying to see where they're at kind of upstairs in the head, to see what their state of mind is before, kind of offering some advice, because like you said, you know, people, They go through things. People have anxiety. They're depressed, and those are triggers to some of that physical behavior, like, you know, overeating or not wanting to exercise. So do you find that, you know, when you go and you meet someone for the first time and you're kind of doing a going over your wellness checklist in your head, do you find you're doing that too? You kind of just want to kind of get a baseline for where they're at. Mentally, do you do that as well?
Well, when I coach someone, I can't say that I just do this mental checklist of them, because if they're enrolling in a tobacco cessation program and I'm helping them quit smoking, I mean, obviously that's a risky behavior. I want to help them if they want to lose weight or if they want to, you know, gain muscle. But the thing is, it's so interesting. 90%, actually, I'm going to say 99% of the time, and I haven't actually like sat down and figured this out, but most of the time when someone enrolls in a program, whether it be healthy pregnancy, whether it be weight loss, whether it be wanting to gain muscle, when I talk to them on their weekly call or their weekly meeting, it always comes down to stress, almost mm-hmm. always. Like sometime in our 20 to 30 minute phone call, it comes down to just a common theme is stress in their life. Is it kids? Is it work? Is it traffic? It's and candid how many people deal with stress. But, you know, I think when people hear the word addiction, they think of dependence on a substance like drugs or alcohol. And I think there's good reason for that, because I've read somewhere where like 22 million of Americans 12 years or older have a significant problem with alcohol or drugs. But when you think about, if you substitute the word behavior for substance, you're going to open up that definition to addiction to all kinds of dependencies, whether it's sex or food, the internet, binge eating, bungee jumping. That desire to experience a high becomes so strong that that so-called addict loses control and seeks that activity despite any of the negative consequences. So, I mean, studies show that addictions light up the same area of the brain as drug addictions. So, I mean, when you think about that, yeah, people are dealing with stress. People are dealing, if you don't deal with that stress, it's going to lead to depression, anxiety. If you don't lead with, you know, deal with that, it's going to lead to other things. So, yeah, when it comes to, you know, addiction and mental health, I think that's such an important thing. Hey, one thing I wanted to talk about, have you seen that show called My Strange Addiction?
You know, you've talked about that before. I haven't seen it yet, but the title of it's really interesting. Is it, you like it? Good show?
I mean, I can't say I like it. It's actually, and I want to be very thoughtful with my words here. It's a
sure.
little, just think about the word. Or think about the title, My Strange Addiction. I've seen a few episodes, and they are wacky or strange, as the title says, but and addictions may seem over the top. The one that I saw with this lady, like, actually enjoyed eating her mattress. I mean, I don't think that's anything I'll ever, like, experience in my professional world, but someone is actually eating their mattress as an addiction. But, again, I think addiction is something that the health world needs to dive into. And typically with me, I help people with sugar or food addiction, but those don't even touch the world of addiction. So that just kind of popped into my head, and I know I have mentioned it because it is a little, you need to Google it and look it up, and we'll talk about it later, but it's a little strange show.
No.
Interesting.
Yeah, very, very interesting. We're going to go ahead now. We have a super interesting interview today. I've been friends with this guy. He's in San Diego, too. His name is Dan Springer. Interesting guy, has overcome a lot in his life, and we got a chance to catch up with him and talk with him for a little while. So let's go ahead and play that interview right now. And if you're just joining us, you can go ahead and send us an email at goingjimfree@gmail.com. Of course, you're probably listening right now on AtlantaLifeRadio.com, but check out all our shows on there. You can follow us also on Twitter at ALR Radio. You can also like us on Facebook, and got a lot of people downloading our shows on iTunes. So we're growing, getting better and bigger every day. I want to bring in our guest today, who's been a friend of mine for a few years. Great guy. Lives in San Diego by me, does a bunch of different things, knows a lot about a lot, as I like to say. Dan, thanks for taking some time with us. And thanks for coming on. What have you been up to these days, man?
Well, thank you, Mark and Beth. I have been just keeping really busy with life and the business that I'm a part of with my fiance here in Coronado, and building up a communications business, consulting a variety of different businesses, which I've been doing pretty much throughout my entire career.
You know, Dan, thank you so much for being a part of the show this week and willing to be so candid about your life, your struggles, and everything in between, which we're going to dive into here in a minute. But my first question to you is, as you know, we're talking about addiction this week. So as we dive into such a hot topic and ask questions about your personal journey, what was your addiction, and what did this addiction do to you? Did it just happen, or did it slowly creep into your life?
Well, thank you, Beth, for that question. It is a sensitive subject for a lot of people, and it's something that I have struggled with for decades. And I always enjoy trying to impart a little bit of my own experience in hopes that it might help other folks out there who might be struggling with their own addiction, whether it be with drugs or alcohol or food or gambling, whatever it may be, because the symptoms are pretty much the same. It's how we deal with it, person to person, that changes. So my story began way back in my 20s when I first had some surgery, and they gave me painkillers, and it took away the pain, but it also took away the physical pain, but it also took away some emotional pain that I, at that point, didn't really realize that I had. And so over the course of, you know, the next few years, I kind of fought it and battled with painkillers primarily, and got married, had three kids, was a businessman, part of a number of different companies, and tried to really balance my career with my family and obligations, but also knew at some point that I might be going down a path that was destructive, but it didn't stop me. So thus began, you know, kind of a lifelong battle against demons and feelings and emotions. And the solution for me at that point was drugs.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, at that point, did you know when you were going through this and the kind of the addiction process was kind of taking over? At that point, did you and maybe some people that are in that boat now that you were in, did you rationalize that what you were doing was okay? I mean, how did the day-to-day part of the work, did you just say, you know what, I'm fine, I don't need any advice? Talk about that.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. Rationalization is a huge part of someone suffering from addiction. So, you know, when you have a family and you're successful, and in my case, I was abusing painkillers, there was some justification in my mind that they were being prescribed. And I think that's a challenge that a lot of folks have initially. The real challenge is, at what point do you cross over that line of intelligent rationalization to a point of denial where you really realize in your heart of hearts that what you're doing is not okay, and you start exhibiting behaviors that are not indicative of who you are as a person, as a human being. And when it starts crossing over into the lives of other people, that's where it starts having a real impact. And so as a father, one of my greatest regrets is that I, over the years, I let it impact my children and the things that we did as a family, and my ex-wife for that matter. So I did rationalize because I was functional at first, for the most part, throughout my addiction, functional, was relatively successful, you know, managed the business, managed the communication functions of a number of different companies. And so you kind of go through life and don't realize the impact of your behavior sometimes until after the fact. And sometimes it is slow and progressive, which is what it was in my case. And in other instances, it's an immediate slap in the face. But the destruction that I caused happened over a number of years. It didn't just happen.
Yeah. You know, you use the word destruction, which is such a powerful word. I mean, when you said that, it was just like I saw destruction in my head. You know, I want to know, because I'm the warm, fuzzy kind of person, how were your choices and, you know, how did your choices change over the years? How did your behavior and how did your addiction affect not only those that you were close to in your life, like your kids and your wife at the time and maybe business partners, but to yourself? I mean, how did this choice of behavior and addiction affect everything around you?
A couple of ways, Beth. I think the first indication, at least subconsciously for me, was that when I started thinking more about when I was going to be able to use drugs, and that became kind of a prevailing thought ahead of my family and ahead of business. So as soon as it started overlapping and became part of my daily life, where it was a thought that came into my head that I needed something just to take the edge off, that's where it started bleeding over into relationships. And I have destroyed a number of relationships with family and friends, lifelong friends, who gave me the benefit of the doubt, tried to help me, said, you know, you sure, you okay? And of course, any good addict would say, yeah, I'm good, I've got this. And in reality, other people were seeing things that I was blind to. And so I pushed some of those people away. I manipulated some of those relationships for my own benefit. And at the end of the day, it destroyed a number of very important relationships that I have with people who I love and who love me. And I think most importantly, it impacted my children, who are a huge part of my life. I have a good relationship with all of my kids now. They all speak to me, and that is a blessing that I probably don't deserve. But, you know, there's a part of me that has to, you know, think that there are good qualities in most human beings, and those I believe came through in the raising of my children. And, you know, if you were to speak to any one of my three kids, I think that they've told me that they would say that despite my struggles, despite the impact that it had on them, that it's made them more aware, made them better people, made them grow up a little bit sooner than they needed to, but they're stronger for it. And I've always encouraged my kids, if they need to talk about this with their friends or other people, that they shouldn't keep it a secret, that if they need to find a way to heal by talking with other people, that that's okay. That's one of the things that I've told them all along that they need to do for themselves.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, and Dan, you're truly a success story. We're talking with Dan Springer this afternoon, or this evening, rather, on Atlanta Life Radio. Dan, one of the questions that I have is, and excuse me if I sound naive here, but where did you get the drugs? Was it easy? Was this something that, I know this was a while back, how difficult was it to get the drugs? Where did you get them? Did you find it to be an easy thing to do?
Great question. I will answer that by telling you that where there's a will, there's a way.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, particularly with prescription drugs, I figured out a way to get them, and in some cases to create issues within my body, like, you know, back pain or something like that, to convince doctors to give it to me. At some point, that becomes a futile effort, because there's only so many times you can go back. But there are certain, you know, ways to accommodate your addiction. Anyone who suffers from a form of addiction usually finds a way to get what they need.
You know, I've had a couple people in my life that have been addicted to, you know, certain things. And I remember specifically someone saying to me, I'll never forget that. And they said it feels like a full-time job getting to my addiction. So whether it was getting the alcohol or the drugs or finding a way or manipulating people, that was their full-time job. I'll never forget that. So that came rushing back to me hearing you answer that question that Mark answered. Or asked. So, yeah, very, very telling.
Beth, that's a really great point. It is a full-time job. It is tiring. It is hard, because one of the key attributes of someone who's in any form of addiction is that they lie. And so they do whatever they can to get what they need, and at some point you forget it's very hard to keep track of the lies that you tell.
Reality.
Even when you are telling the truth, sometimes you start wondering yourself, well, is this really the truth? So you, it does become, you become kind of mired in the disease, and it does take over. You know, it is a full-time job on top of living life, which is, you know, not a good thing.
Dan, sit tight for a few minutes here. We want to bring you back for a second segment. You're listening to Atlanta Life Radio with our special guest today, Dan Springer. We will be right back. And we are back here on Atlanta Life Radio. If you want to call in, you can, 347-324-5246. Again, AtlantaLifeRadio.com. And you can email us at goingjimfree@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at ALR Radio. Also, make sure you can like us on Facebook and continue to listen to us on iTunes. Dan, thanks for sticking around for another segment. I guess the question, we're talking about addiction today. That's our theme here on Going Jim Free. What was the moment for you that kind of turned it around? And I don't want to say ended it all, but was there one defining moment that you just said, that's it, we got to turn this thing around?
Gosh, Mark, there have been many of those. There have been many moments, many what a lot of folks in recovery talk about, you know, bottoms, which is not a phrase I like to use because no one really, I think the ultimate bottom is death. And so I don't know that there is really, there have been so many instances where I have said to myself, that's it, I'm done, not going to do it anymore. I can't do this to anyone else. I can't do this to myself. And, you know, there's a saying in the rooms of 12-step that now I forgot what it was. that
okay.
Yeah, it's just it is a cunning and baffling disease, and it just can take over everything. So there have been so many, quote, moments of clarity that I thought that I had, and that still didn't stop me. It didn't stop me from when my ex-wife said after, you know, a handful of times, you know, the next time it happens, I'm going to have to divorce you. I still did it, and the divorce came, and, you know, my kids pleading to me in my very first treatment that I went through, you know, you're my hero, please don't do this. That didn't stop me. And so there have been so many instances where I have hurt myself and hurt other people, where they've pled with me and tried to be there and support me. And yet the addiction is so powerful and very difficult to manage.
Yeah. You know, Dan, is addiction something that you think about a lot, even though people might say that you're cured, or, and I don't know what the word is, but do you still find it as a struggle on a daily basis now, years later?
Absolutely. It is. There is no, quote, cure. A lot of people, even members of my family, think that it's a, you know, a choice that you make. And, you know, my strong held belief is that the very first time you do it or you act on the impulse, that is a choice. But then after that, once it gets inside your body, the disease takes over. And it, you know, it's recognized now by in the DSM-4, which is the medical guidelines, as a disease. And so once it gets in your body, it's kind of like all bets are off.
Right. Yeah.
Dan, you've probably met so many people along the way here on this journey. And again, we're talking with Dan Springer here on Atlanta Life Radio. How about advice for people or those with loved ones that are going down this dangerous path? Maybe they're rationalizing it that they don't have a problem. Maybe they have a loved one that is doing the same thing that they I don't think it's a big deal. They're fine. But in the back of their mind, they're thinking, maybe this is a problem. What kind of advice would you give to to these families or individuals, because you've been down the road and you still have to battle it. What advice would you give to people, maybe warning signs even to people that are going through this fight?
Sure. I unfortunately, despite all the warning signs that people might see, at the end of the day, the only person who can solve this is the person who's going through the addiction. And I think everyone in their gut, in their heart of hearts, knows. And so that's where the denial comes in, even with family members. So they try everything they can and try to intervene. And at some point, there is a level of personal responsibility that comes in where someone has to accept the fact that they have a problem and seek a solution for it. Now, you know, there's a lot of discussion in 12-step rooms, AA, NA, others, that this is the only way to solve this is through a spiritual awakening of some sort, that it's a spiritual malady. And I do agree with that. There's some, you know, connection that I have that other people have with some higher power, some, you know, universe that's greater than themselves. That is definitely part of it. There's also the physical part of it where people, after a long period of time of being in addiction, the drugs or the alcohol, whatever it may be, hijack your brain. And there are parts of your, you know, the midbrain and the frontal cortex that actually get tricked into now thinking that this is the way it's supposed to be, that this is the way that I'm supposed to be living. And it eliminates the natural way in which our body gets pleasure through serotonin and other avenues. And so, you know, at the very beginning, I think that's where, you know, there's the greatest likelihood possibility of getting success with someone. But over time, it becomes a real physical, spiritual, emotional malady that is really tricky and very, very hard. And this is not about willpower, in my opinion. This is more about finding some solutions that work for you, because it's different for everyone. Everyone has a different road down which they go to find recovery.
Right. Yeah. You know, Dan, your story is amazing, and my heart is so full for you right now. You've actually inspired me as a health professional in helping people with addiction. So I have certainly picked up a few tips, so thank you for that. But what I'm sure our audience wants to know and what I want to know is, how is life for you now? Years later, you've gone through this, you're smarter, you're wiser, how is life for you now?
Life for me is great. I'm engaged. I'm running a business with her and starting my own business. That said, I have to be on alert every single day. One of the other adages in 12-step is, you know, one day at a time, is to not look too far back in your past and let it haunt you, and not look too far in the forward, in the future. So it is there are things that I have to do, I try to do every single day. I'm not always successful in that, and to know that I am at risk and will be for the rest of my life. And so one of the ways I remediate that is to try to help other people, talking like I am right now and being honest about my own experience, and just staying grounded in the things that make me happy without needing to use other substances to get there.
Dan, you know, you just kind of touched on something, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about it. Do you like talking about this? Is this something that if we went and dealt with, I'm just throwing out a number, 25 or 30 people that are dealing with some kind of addiction, when you're going through the process in recovery, do you get to the, and I'm sure you talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, is there a point where you don't want to talk about it, or is it better for someone to be open about it? Is this something you discuss with your fiancé a lot? Do you still talk about it with your kids? Or is it something where you say, you know, they knew what the issues were, and we don't want to beat a dead horse. What do you kind of fit in all that? What do you say to something like that?
It's all about balance. And for me, it's important for me to talk about it with LaDan, my fiance, and we talk about it every day. And it's important for me to talk with my family and my kids and people in my life. And it's important for me to talk with other people in the program. There does come a point, where you have to use a little discretion, because there are a lot of folks out there that still judge people who have an addiction. And so without being too overt about it, I have to be really careful, because my inclination is to try to share my experience with as many people as possible, hoping that they will learn something. And the fact of the matter is that most people, I think the statistic is, two out of every three people either suffer from or know someone directly who suffers from some form of addiction. So it's not like it's a secret. Some people try to keep it. But it is a social issue that requires attention. And it requires, I think, people to not look at folks with addiction as criminals, but as suffering from some form of mental health issue that needs attention.
You know, listening to you, Dana, my heart is so full right now. I'm so happy for you. And I've always thought, when each of us come to the end of our lives, what matters the most is not your social standings, but what will matter and was always matters is the values we uphold and the principles and the possibilities we live for. What matters is the love we give and show, the statements we make. So when you choose to live with respect for yourself, your body, and others, when you choose to affirm dignity with your life, when you choose to understand the ups and downs and the beauty of the earth and the people around us, something really happens. And listening to you talk, that really, really just kind of hit home to me. So thank you so much. You really affected my life.
Well, thank you, Beth. I appreciate it so much. Those words go straight to my heart as well.
Yeah.
Do you do anything like meditation or anything like that now, Dan? Do you try to get to a good place? Is there anything that you do now that, we talk about wellness on this show, and people like me, I love to walk and to clear my head that way. What do you do? Do you do anything on the wellness side to keep you going and to stay motivated and keep you healthy?
Yes, I do meditation, not as much as I should. I do a lot of meditation and prayer and love walking. Don't do as much as I should. Exercising and appreciating. Really, I spend a lot of time writing, which is kind of my forte, and spending as much time as I can in the moment, enjoying, as Beth so aptly put, my surroundings and nature. And I'm blessed to live in one of the most beautiful cities, I think, on the planet. And
yeah, it
so
is.
There's a lot of beauty in the world. I love watching people and kind of seeing what they're all about. So there are a lot of different things that I do, a lot of things that I should be doing more of, that I'm committed to every day trying to do. So it's just every day I have to look at myself at the end of the day. Did I do at least one thing today to improve my life or improve the lives of or the life of another human being? So if I can go to bed and that's all I did all day, then it's all good.
Yeah. Well, Dan, we appreciate you taking half an hour of your time. I know you're a busy guy with work and everything, but we know that this is such an important issue to tackle. So thanks so much for coming on. It was great. So I hope you had a good time doing this.
Oh, I had a great time. And Mark, thank you for, asking me to come on. And Beth, thanks for your support in doing the interview. It's an important discussion, an important message that needs to get out to more people. So any way I can do that, I will certainly continue to try.
Thanks so much, Dan. That was Dan Springer on Atlanta Life Radio. Dan, thanks for coming on. I hope you have a good rest of your night. And tell your fiance we said hi. Thanks again.
Will do. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Beth.
Beth, that's a good interview. That's a good guy, and that's some heavy stuff that he tackled. He covered a lot of ground there.
I know, literally.
And it's funny. I've known Dan a while, and you know, occasionally we'd have a cup of coffee. This is a good guy, and this is the kind of guy that if you met him, you want to pull for a guy like this. So,
right.
Great story.
Yeah. Kudos to you for finding him. So awesome.
People are just joining us. That was Dan Springer here on AtlantaLifeRadio.com. Still have some time to. We're going to do a couple of emails here in a second. GoingJimFree@gmail.com, @ALRRadio for Twitter, and then like us on Facebook. We're talking about a lot of things today, about women's health, mental health, addiction. And we're a little shorter on time today because we wanted to give Dan a little more time, and the interview was going so well that it kind of spilled over. But let's get to the Ask Beth segment. Are you ready? You want to do that?
I am. I'm going with an Ask Mark segment, too. You know that. In the near future, I'm going to put you on the spot.
I'm just the guy that kind of hosts this. I tee it up for you. You're the smarter one of the two. That's why it's not called the Ask Mark segment, because Mark is going to talk about how difficult it is to buy flowers on Mother's Day.
That was a great story.
You're smarter than I am. So let's do the Ask Beth segment. It's shorter, and if you want me to, Beth, I'll weigh in, but let's get you going first. So this is the first question, just first the two. Every morning I have a Danish, and it leaves me craving something sugary 2 hours later. This is a common problem. In the afternoon, I grab a candy bar to cope with the afternoon slump. Again, another problem. And then reach for a cola to get out of your post-slump slump. Why is this? And do you have any advice? I'm going to give you the floor here in a second. But I will say this. This is a common problem amongst people that are working in an office setting. I hear this one all the time. Sweet in the morning, sweet after lunch, sweet at 4 o'clock to get you to 5 o'clock. So that's just my opinion. That's why I hear that all the time from people. So I think it's a great question.
Oh, my gosh, me too. Mark, did you know that sweetness is the first taste humans prefer from birth? So I think it's just a telltale sign that we are addicted to sugar as a society. We've actually talked about this a handful of times on the show. And, you know, carbohydrates and sugar stimulate the release of these feel-good brain chemicals, and sugar is a carbohydrate. So the taste of sugar releases these endorphins that can calm and relax us, make us happy, offer that natural high, so to say. So if our audience has been listening for a while, you all know that, like me, I'm addicted to sugar. I do have a sweet tooth. And sweets just taste good, too. So with all that going for it, why wouldn't we crave sugar? Why would not we crave sugar? So the problem comes in is not when we indulge in a sweet treat now and then, but when we overconsume, like our listener. And that's so easy to do when sugar is added to so many processed foods, including breads and yogurts and juices and ketchup and sauces, and I could go on and on and on. When you eat, your body's naturally going to crave more sugar. And often that gets reinforced by rewarding ourselves with that afternoon sweet treat, with that afternoon soda pop. And you're doing yourself no justice because this is going to make you crave more and more and more. So if you do indulge, I mean, the best tip I can do to kind of make sure that sugar crash doesn't happen is to do a little food combining. If the idea of stopping at a cookie or a candy bar seems impossible, try to have a little bit of protein with it, and that's going to reduce the carbohydrates and the sugars in your body. I actually like to combine craving food with a healthy one. Like, I love chocolate, so sometimes I'll dip a banana in chocolate, like dark chocolate, and that gives me what I want, but I'm also getting something healthy, or almonds with chocolate chips. So it's this little bonus I get. I had a stomach craving with the healthy nutrients. So that's kind of a little tip. But honestly, my motto in life is sugar is the devil's poison. I think sugar is the demise of the world in our bodies. I think it's horrible. So I honestly think cutting out all simple sugars is what you need to do. Although the initial 48 to 72 hours are tough, I really think that going cold turkey helps people diminish after a few days. I mean, you're still going to have that sugar craving, but you're going to train your taste buds to be satisfied with less. So that's what I am.
You know, and I don't, and I think, yeah, I think you hit on all good things there. And I think one of the problems is if you go into so many of these businesses, and you can understand why employees, you know, even if they don't have that weakness, you can understand the temptation, because I go in and out of businesses, and you walk by the break room, and it's a soda machine, okay? And invariably, there's the table in the break room where employees sit, and it's been somebody's birthday, or it was some, you know, someone's leaving, there's a going away party, and there's just pastry strewn all over the table, and people are walking by, and there's still, you know, slices of the cake and cookies and the sodas right in the machine right there, and someone can just jiggle the change in their pocket, get a soda, and so it's tough. I mean, I think, you know, I don't mean to go on a tangent there, but it all starts with, in some of those cases where you almost have to, you have to either be strong or remove some of that from some of the culture of business. But that's kind of what I've seen when I go in, and you go, well, shoot, I'd walk by and look at that cookie, looks pretty good. It's 4 o'clock. I'm hungry. I just finished this assignment at work, and you know, I'm going to cruise for the last hour. What's wrong with having a cookie? So
it's
understandable how it happens. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I want to let our audience, and Mark, I don't think I've told you this, Mark, but I'm actually going like on week 5, no sweets in my life. And to me,
wow.
I know. I mean, I have apples and I have fruits, and I'm doing this for health reasons more than anything, but it was just, sugar was almost consuming my life. And that's embarrassing. I'm putting myself out there for our audience. I mean, I couldn't get enough sugar. So I'm going on week 5, no cookies, no. And I have had dark chocolate. I have had that, but it's 88% dark cocoa and it's pretty healthy. But last thing I want to say to hit on this is make sure you eat regularly. Waiting too long between meals is going to set you up for sabotage. It's going to set you up to choose sugary, fatty foods that cut your hunger. Instead of, you know, eating every 3 to 5 hours, you can really keep your blood sugar stable, and that's going to help you avoid irrational eating behavior. So try to make sure you don't let yourself get famished and really, really hungry. That helps a lot. I find that with me in my sugar quest to end that in my life, that has helped me, that I make sure I don't get overly hungry.
Yeah, no, all good stuff there. And I'm surprised you were a big cupcake person, weren't you? So you
I was.
You never even have an occasional cupcake. Good for you.
Yeah, I'm not saying never, but I'm saying,
right.
You know, I'm giving myself a good 6 to 9 months. I'm going to try and cut sugar out completely. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Question 2, and I'll weigh in on this one too when you're done. My 14-year-old son seems to be addicted to electronics. If we let him, he'll spend 10 hours a day on his tablet, computer, or Xbox. He's never been an athletic kid and only seems to be happy when he is with one of the technology devices. I want him to choose other things and do something worthwhile over the summer. Any suggestions?
You know, first off, I like the way you framed your question. Like, I want him to choose to do other things. That's a completely different statement than I want him to stop. I want him to stop being in his room and isolating himself. And, you know, in the past, Mark and I have joked on the show about giving advice to parents when we ourselves are not parents. But I do have to say congrats on that statement. I have to preface again to say I'm not a counselor or a therapist, but I guess it's
neither am I. Yeah.
But I would ask, is there a problem with your son? So before you decide that electronics maybe are the problem, do your best to determine whether games or electronics are a way of him medicating himself against isolation from some other problem, maybe bullying, depression, anxiety, loneliness, or maybe even some other social or emotional problem. If you want to help him choose differently, you're going to have to help him experience the downside of his habits. What he knows today is that grabbing that controller or diving into technology, that's associated, his feelings are associated with engagement, enjoyment, social connection, and maybe even safe. So if he chooses something different, he will need to feel that the other choices will create better consequences, and that can be really tricky. I guess the first step would be help him engage in experiences that will awaken him to either the negative consequences of his current choices or even better, the positive consequences of other choices. Maybe invite him to think of activities that might create more enjoyment that could be far more fun for him than playing on his computer. I mean, personally for me, I think being on a computer after a couple of hours, I'm just dreading it. But, you know, going for a walk, experiencing being part of a team. And, you know, again, I admire your desire to think about long-term influence rather than short-term compliance. I think my worst moments as a trainer have been where I was more interested in behavior rather than growth with my clients. So, you know, if you reflect on, you know, what I've shared, keep an eye on what he wants, what you really want, I am sure you're going to find a way to help him grow and in a way that only a loving parent can.
You know, back when we grew up, I'm going to.
When we were kids. That's when we sound so old.
When in the Stone Age, in the Stone Ages, when there was no cell phones and we walked 5 miles uphill both ways to school in the snow. I will say this. So things have obviously changed with electronics, and I get it. However, I will say this. When I was growing up, and I think the person that wrote this in was 14-year-old child. So at 14, I remember, I mean, I was more athletic. I was playing sports, so that kept me out. But my parents would have said, if I was just coming home in the afternoon watching TV, they would have said, don't you want to go play? Go get some fresh air. Here's a dollar to go walk the dogs. I mean, there was like a chore list, and one of the chores we had, and I never thought it was a chore walking a dog, but I mean, that's one of the good pieces of advice. If you have a dog, I'm not telling people to run out and go get a dog or something like that, but if you have a dog, have your child maybe take a break. If they're responsible enough to walk the dog, even if they go do that for 15, 20, first of all, the dog will love it. And it's great exercise. So you can even start with little things as far as your child being productive and being outside and moving around. That's what I would tell. And again, you know, that we're not counselors and all that, and we're not even parents, but I think that's step one, just fresh air. It's walking, and walking is huge, and you can go from zero to something rather quickly. This isn't taking them at 14 and saying you've got to go to the gym and go start working out or even picking up a sport. This is just, hey, you can put your phone down for 30 minutes and take Murray or someone come over to my house and walk my dog if they want. but that's how I look at it. I think the best advice for something like that, even if the child is having some kind of issue and they love electronics, just kind of carve out. Start with 20 to 30 minutes a day and say, you got to take the dog for a walk, or we're going to go for a walk, or whatever the case is. Just some form of movement. That's what I did growing up. I mean, when I got home from school, and again, we didn't have the Xbox and all that stuff, but it was kind of assumed that if I wasn't playing sports, I was like, hey, Mark, you know, take the dog out for a walk or go, you know, and I wanted to. So everybody's different. I'm not judging, but I think that's a good start. That's my rant about that.
Yes.
Yes.
Is it good?
And that was a good rant. And I think, you know, bottom line, what you're saying, what I'm saying in different ways is, you know, what happens in your life becomes a statement of human possibilities for you and your son. You know, your life, his life becomes a tool of compassion and health and a voice to be reckoned with. So just listen to him and be gentle, and a lot of encouragement goes a long way. So
yeah, and I think as we wrap up here, I think that's a good challenge of the week. If people want to go on Facebook and like us, I will challenge somebody if they have children and are struggling with getting them outside and moving around. Here's your challenge for the week: have your teenager put down the phone and go outside for 15 to 20 minutes and walk around and walk barefoot in the grass and all of those good things. Hey, next week, Beth, we're going to continue on. It's still going to be May, so we'll continue on with something with women's health. So that's still in the process. We'll figure that out. But boy, what a great show today. Powerful, good topics. Dan Springer, outstanding. Anything else you want to talk about here before we wrap this up and say goodbye?
You know, I guess my kind of goodbye thought is I want to encourage anyone listening that is struggling with addictions to reach out to someone they can trust. And this may not be your best friend. And I'm not saying that you can't trust your best friend, because your best friend might be your drinking buddy or your shopping partner. You know, find someone that you can trust to help you and guide you in making healthier decisions for your life. So that's kind of my, you know, final wrap-up thought of the week.
I like it. I like it. Hey, have a good, Beth, have a good rest of the week. And, yeah, stay healthy, stay well. And we want to say that to everybody out there. Hope everybody has a good rest of the week. Have a good weekend, and we will see you back here next week. Have a good rest of the week, everybody.